Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Carrie Wofford, who's a Democratic strategist with 20 years of policy and political experience from White House campaigns and senior Capitol Hill posts. Until 2013, Wofford served Chairman Tom Harkin of the United States Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions as the senior committee counsel. She was awarded the 2012 Freedom Award, the 2012 Congressional Staffer of the Year Award, and the 2012 National Legislative Proponent Award. Wofford also served Majority Leader Harry Reid, running an in-house think tank for Democratic senators from 1993 to 1998. She was a policy advisor in the Clinton White House for Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Al Gore, and Robert Reich, and has also worked on policy ideas for the Obama White House. Welcome to Background Briefing, Carrie Wofford.
Hi, thanks. Great to be here.
And I guess the question about today's Rose Garden ceremony, which is unprecedented in as much as the president laid down a marker in introducing three judges to the D.C. Court of Appeals, who've already Republicans have already filibustered a very qualified candidate twice prior to this. So the impression is that he's laying down a marker and basically challenging the Republicans not to filibuster these nominations. I guess my question would be, why has it taken so long?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think the key is how different the times are today than they used to be. So this has been a very long period of years here, about 5 years of the Senate Republicans blocking President Obama's judicial nominations and obstructing them, and it's unprecedented. So this is not how the Democrats treated President Bush's judicial nominations. It's not how President Clinton's were treated. It's not how President Reagan's were treated. This is not how we do business. But they have been, and I worked for Harry Reid for a while in the majority leader's viewpoint, you see the Republicans blocking on a party line vote, perfectly reasonable, mainstream judges, and that is just not how things were ever done before. So I think the president is trying to say, enough. Let's move these judges. The American people deserve to have their cases heard. This court, as you may know, the D.C. Circuit, handles the appeals of citizens' rights to appeal administrative rules. So when the EPA puts out rules on clean air or clean water, or the Labor Department puts out rules on workplace safety, this is the only place you get to go. So it's detrimental to the American people when they don't have enough judges to get their cases heard.
So the president basically said warned the Republicans not to play games, as if they haven't been playing games, and you have to admit quite successfully. If they've arbitrarily decided that in order to get anything passed in the Senate, you have to have 60 votes, then they basically shut down hundreds and hundreds of bills, my understanding. Tom Coburn alone has shut down over hundreds. And then the president is saying again today in the Rose Garden, when a Republican was president, 11 judges on the D.C. Circuit Court made complete sense. Now that a Democrat is president, it apparently doesn't. Eight is suddenly enough. And he's referring, of course, to the attempts on the part of the minority leader of the Judiciary Committee to basically change the rules and say, no, we after all of this, we only need eight judges. So, and of course, he's talking about packing the court, with a, alluding to FDR. I mean, it's pretty...
I clerked on the D.C. Circuit when I was fresh out of Yale Law School, and I saw my judge fairly recently, who's currently one of the active judges on the D.C. Circuit, and I'm not going to name who what is, but my judge remarked on how desperate they are for judges to come in and take the case, to take the cases. They're having to have retired judges work overtime to take these cases. The number of appeals per active judge has increased 38%. Since 2005, and nearly 50% from 2003. The Congressional Research Service, CRS, is a nonpartisan research entity of the government that the Congress can use to research information about bills. They recently put out a report saying that there has been a notable change in how judges are being blocked, a notable change. So there is something different going on.
Well, it's extraordinary, though, that not only have the Republicans gotten away with basically shutting down the Democrats who have the majority, and it really came to light in a very clear and present way with the NRA-sponsored attempts to shut down even modest attempts at reducing gun violence with something like a 90% majority of the American people, the will of 90% being thwarted by the minority. But my sense is that in framing this, what's behind this threat on the part of the president is that if you guys go ahead and filibuster these three nominations, then we're going to pull out the nuclear option, which is what is the idea of ending the filibuster through Senate rules implies. Why call it the nuclear option? And that's so apocalyptic. For God's sake, all they're doing is going back to how the Republicans operated for the last 200 years. So it's not a nuclear option. It's business as usual. It's the Republicans who have changed the rules and usurped power.
That's a great point. You're right. All they're seeking is a return to regular order. Regular order is the way Senate has always been. You're right. This is the filibustering of every single motion to proceed, which means you can't even start the debate, the filibustering of every judicial nominee, the filibustering of nominees, and then once we break the filibuster, they pass 98-0. I mean, why did we have to have a filibuster when it was going to pass 98-0? We saw that time and time again. You're right. It's just a return to regular order.
Well, then it sort of reminds me of the framing deficit that the Democrats have vis-a-vis the Republicans that scholar up at UC Berkeley, George Lakoff, argues about. Is it simply a poor framing to call it the nuclear option? Why don't the Democrats call it a restoration of American democracy and business as usual?
That's a great point. You should come up to Washington and come give us some advice. That's an excellent point.
There's enough pundits and pontificators in Washington. You don't need another one. What's your sense then of this play on the part of the president? Because one of the things to remind our audience of, surely, Carrie Wofford here, is that the D.C. Court of Appeals, the very one that has these open seats, one of which has been open since 2005 when John Roberts went to the Supreme Court, they passed a ruling recently that essentially cuts off the president's attempt to get around the end run of the filibuster by doing recess appointments, which is the only recourse that he has. They've even voided or attempted to void his recess appointments. So he right. must know about it, surely. It must be getting kind of personal, isn't it?
Well, that's an excellent point. It quite possibly is personal. It's not entirely clear why there's this obstruction that hasn't ever happened before. I mean, President Obama has twice the number of vacant judgeships as President Bush had. It's twice the number. So it's just but you're right. I think the reason the president is upping the ante is that he is anticipating obstruction. I spoke to some former colleagues in the Senate, and they do anticipate that there will be obstruction on these three nominees. So I think the president is getting ready for that.
So will he, if the Republicans sort of sandbag him, would he then just agree, would he settle for the three if they decided to give him a break on the three but then return to filibustering as usual? I mean, isn't it really incumbent on the president and the Democrats to end this and to restore majority rule?
Yeah, we will have to see what happens. We don't know how the president is going to react after the obstruction and how the Democrats are going to react after yet more obstruction of regular order, especially when this is not how they treated President Bush's nominees. We don't know how they're going to react. I agree.
And again, I'm speaking with Carrie Wofford, who's a Democratic strategist with 20 years of policy and political experience from White House campaigns and senior Capitol Hill posts. And until 2013, she served Chairman Tom Harkin on the U.S. Senate Committee for Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions as senior committee counsel. She also worked for Majority Leader Harry Reid, running an in-house think tank for Democratic senators from 1993 to 1998. So to understand why Harry Reid and some of the younger Democratic senators for some time have been pushing him to change the rules so that the Republicans can't usurp power, as they have done for some time now, by the continuous use of the filibuster, the objections that I understand, as much as one learns about the negotiations that go on between the junior senators and the senior senators, is that the senior senators feel that if they were to change the rules, they may end up ruining the day if indeed the Republicans win a majority in 2014. And obviously, numerically, the Republicans have an advantage because there's a considerably more open Democratic Senate seats than there are Republican seats.
That's an excellent point. But don't forget that this last election cycle, the 2012, there was the same numeric disadvantage, and people thought that the Republicans might take control. I think, and by the way, I just wanted to clarify, from 93 to 98, I was with the Clinton White House. I was with Harry Reid much more recently. But I think you are correct. There is this sort of younger, more junior senators saying, hey, this is crazy. We shouldn't tolerate that. I will note that Tom Harkin, an old-timer, was also part of pushing for filibuster reform. And you're right. So far, Leader Reid has not wanted to – he's wanted to be respectful of the Republicans. He's such a decent human being that he doesn't – he's not trying to – he doesn't want to change the rules in a way that will further inflame partisan fires. So he wants things to be calmer, return to regular order. That's really what he's getting at. I think it's less about a fear of if we lose control. It's much more about let's return to being a gentlemanly institution. He doesn't want to have to change the rules. He feels like that's a slap in the face. So he's very much a respectful gentleman, and he just wants us to get back to that.
But didn't he make a gentlemanly deal with Mitch McConnell after younger senators like Jeff Merkley weighed in, and then McConnell turned around and slapped him in the face by filibustering Caitlin Halligan?
I agree. You're right. And that's they called it a gentleman's agreement. And the Republicans did seem to go right back on it right away. And Leader Reid shortly thereafter said on the floor that perhaps the people who are pushing for filibuster reform were correct, but he didn't go as far as to say he was ready to do it.
Well, you've described him as being gentlemanly, and you know him, you work for him. I understand he was also a former boxer, so how many times does he have to take it on the chin?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yes, he's a fighter, too. You are right, and he's a scrappy fighter. We just don't know what's going to happen. I think it's hard to predict. It'd be easy to, hypothesize if the Republicans go too far this time, then the Democrats will surely change the rules. It's one thing I learned up there is there are 100 individual senators with different points of view, and it's hard to predict how they'll react.
Well, what about how the American people will react? I mean, there's an expression in this country that nice guys finish last. And as a Democratic strategist, are the Democrats in danger of just looking weak? Don't the people in this country want their leaders to be effective?
That's an excellent point, and I think that's why you've seen President Obama taking this case to the American public, just as he's been taking the gun control question to the American public, and just as he's taking immigration reform to the American public, and just as he's taking the student loan interest rate rise to the American public. He's saying, Americans, you need to make your voices heard. You need to call your senators and call your congressmen, and if they are voting or threatening to vote in ways that are completely at odds with the American public, you need to let them know. So I think he is trying to make this a broader conversation, get this beyond the Beltway. It shouldn't just be a bunch of senators sitting in a room. It should be American people making their voices heard, and people can make their voices heard through Twitter and through emails and through phone calls. There's so many ways to make your voice heard today, and I think he's ready for Americans to get a little louder.
Well, what's at stake here, though, is something that's quite profound, is it not? And that is the future of the judiciary. And my understanding is that as a third branch of government, the judiciary is deeply slanted in favor of the Republicans. And I just spoke the other day to a recovering Republican, John Dean, who was President Nixon's counsel and obviously was famous for the Watergate hearings. He made the point that the Republicans have been putting in very mediocre judges, very ideological judges, and that most of the judges that have been filibustered, and in fact all of the judges that have been filibustered, have been highly qualified. And it seems that by being so obstructionist, they've already moved the goalpost to the right, because they're basically saying you can only put up moderate judges. I mean, there used to be liberals on the Supreme Court,
right.
William O. Douglas, for God's sake. And, you know, I mean, the goalposts have been moved, have they not?
They've been totally moved. I mean, the nominees who have been obstructed recently are so moderate and so mainstream that the liberals, you know, the liberal organizations have been complaining that they're too moderate and too mainstream. And even these very moderate and very mainstream judges we can't get through. And you also mentioned sort of the importance of this court. To share with your viewers, the D.C. Circuit is entrusted with interpreting so many laws that matter so much. The Americans with Disabilities Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Environmental Protection Agency, clean water, clean air, Superfund, resource conservation, the enemy combatants and terrorism and detention cases. I mean, this court matters. It's a unique circuit court with unique jurisdiction, and we've got to have judges on there. And these are very mainstream, very moderate, completely unobjectionable judges.
Well, just in closing, Carrie Wofford, what's your sense of what's going to happen? Do you think the president's daring the Republicans to go ahead and filibuster, go ahead and make my day type of thing? Do you think they will do it, or will they let him have these three judges and go back to business as usual? Or are we going to have a change here? Is this usurpation of power going to continue?
It's an excellent question. I don't think the president was so much as saying, make my day, I challenge, try and obstruct and see what happens. I think he's anticipating an obstruction, and I think the Democrats who I've spoken to in the Senate are anticipating obstruction. So people, the behind-the-door conversations that people have been having indicate that we are likely to see obstruction on these three.
Well, Carrie Wofford,
they are moderate and mainstream.
Well, Carrie Wofford, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Carrie Wofford, who's a Democratic strategist with 20 years of policy and political experience from White House campaigns and senior Capitol Hill posts. Until 2013, she served Chairman Tom Harkin of the United States Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions as the senior committee counsel. She was awarded the 2012 Freedom Award, the 2012 Congressional Staffer of the Year Award, and the 2012 National Legislative Proponent Award. Wofford also served Majority Leader Harry Reid, running an in-house think tank for Democratic senators, and from 1993 to 1998, she was a policy advisor in the Clinton White House for Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Al Gore, and Robert Reich, and has also worked on policy ideas for the Obama White House. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Don't talk about the home of
estamos.